Hello?
Hello?
Hello? You
pod
to win the game. That's the great thing about sports.
You pod to win the game.
All right, welcome into You Pod to Win the Game. I am Charles Robinson here with Jory Epstein. The draft is in the books. Priority free agents have been signed. This is it. Now we can actually look at NFL teams, and for the most part, barring a few little tweaks here and there, maybe a player gets traded or not, we are looking at the composition, the bones of every single team. Some are completely fully formed, but at least we have structure to every team and have an idea of what they should look like when they roll out onto the field. Jory, we have 8 storylines here that we think you and I put together. We think that people should be paying attention to between now and training camp, things that are going to be in motion. And this is going to be one in a number of different podcasts, obviously leading up to training camp, where we talk about maybe different lists, really important stories or players to watch, whatever. I think, though, we got to start with number 8 and Jordan Love. The news with Jordan Love, the 5th-year options, 2020 historically bad first round, a grand total, a record, 20 players did not have their 5th-year options picked up, which means only 12 did, 62.5%. Of the first round, the 2020 draft, the pandemic draft, the COVID draft, everybody's at home draft. The first everyone is at home draft. Everybody missed badly, it seems like. If you get 62.5% success rate, that 5th-year option is a great sign of self-evaluation. If teams are looking at their own players and saying, we don't want to extend you for another year, that means that you probably think you didn't do very well. And we are including Jordan Love in that. Why? People will say, well, geez, they didn't pick up a 5th-year option, but they gave him a 1-year contract extension instead of the option. That's part of why Jory and I are going to talk about Jordan Love as the number 8 storyline to watch between here and camp, because what the Packers did there was they hedged their bets. Instead of having to pay $20 million in guaranteed money with the 5th-year option, they put themselves on the hook for, what's it, 12? I have to look at the figures of the exact
13.5 fully guaranteed.
13.5. Okay, there you go. 13.5 fully guaranteed. So what that hedge means, you're clipping a little more than $6.5 million off of your bill. If Jordan Love plays in 2023 and you don't like him, you just go, yeah, we're walking. But hey, at least we didn't put ourselves on the hook for $20 million in 2024. Instead, it's 13.5 guaranteed. I just have to ask you, Jory. I mean, we're heading now into the rookie mini camps in the next, you know, week plus. That's going to jump into OTAs in late May. And then late May is going to be pointed toward full squad camps in mid-June. Hugely important time for Jordan Love. Hugely important time for Packers beat writers, because they're actually going to get to watch this guy more than they ever have. The entire team is his. You tell me. I mean, can this guy play? And you and I have covered OTAs with teams before. We've covered mini camps. You get an idea, right? We start to see guys out there, really maybe what they can do. We start to get an idea. It only took me watching a couple Trey Lance practices to go, man, that guy doesn't look very accurate when he's out here. Now we're going to be able to watch Jordan Love.
Yeah, no, I think it's going to be super interesting. I think that you had made a good point before we were on air, Charles, of – like, look how different of a situation this will be compared to the Daniel Jones situation in New York last year, yep, where they didn't pick up his 5th-year option. You kind of understood why New York didn't going into it, but it also created a lot of uncertainty. Then he has this awesome year, especially relative to the first few in his career. And all of a sudden, New York's got to pay him a full contract and really extend him. And I think that here, you have the best of both worlds, where – if I'm his agent, like, you, this is not the time to be like, no, I want my guy to get his money. We're not agreeing to this deal. He hasn't done anything yet. He might, but he hasn't yet. This isn't a guy who has done okay for a few years. He's done nothing because he hasn't had the chance to. So he gets a little more money than he might end up being worth in terms of what his performance will say. But for the Packers, if they don't give him 2 years, then how are you going to even see what he can do this year? Because he'll know, you had to actively decide not to have confidence in me next year. And I think that, that's a pretty big deal. So I think that that's super interesting. I think that for a guy like Jordan Love, just getting the reps at practice is going to be huge. You won't be able to know fully what he's capable of, but he hasn't really had the chance to grow. I mean, look, Aaron Rodgers wasn't coming to everything in the offseason, so maybe he was standing in here and there, but you still know it's not your team. You still know that a year ago, the Packers were giving Aaron Rodgers this extension, and that was sending a pretty big message. So I think that this is a win-win for both sides, and I think that it'll be really interesting to see what he's capable of. Again, for our listeners, he's played in 10 games ever. He started one ever in 2021, and his career completion rate to this point is 60%. He's thrown 3 touchdowns, 3 interceptions. And even last year, he really just was not getting much of an opportunity. But this is a guy who I think had a lot of potential physically coming out of college. I think he's super engaging and had sort of this like disarming leadership quality. I think we both spent some time with him. I know I first met him at the Senior Bowl and was really impressed with just like the down-to-earth nature, but also the confidence he had. And I think this is a guy who also is now going to have some new weapons in the room with their draft picks. And so he will have the opportunity, but it's going to be hard. And one of the reasons it will be hard for him especially is because he's following up Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers. If this is Tennessee or Jacksonville or one of these places that doesn't have decades of incredible quarterback play, then it's not quite that difficult. I mean, the expectations are not as high.
Right. Yeah. I mean, look, you make a couple of good points. And, you know, just starting back when you started to talk about it and you compared it to the Daniel Jones situation, that is the win-win, as you said. I mean, you don't have the – if they don't pick up the fifth-year option with him, as it did with Daniel Jones, it's just like, oh, it casts this huge storm cloud over him, right, for all of and immediately. It doesn't get here when the 2023 season starts. It rolls in right away. It hangs over OTAs. Literally every single thing he does becomes a measure. It's still going to be that way with Jordan Love, except that they already have a mechanism in place to keep him around the fifth year. So it lessens the story just a little bit. No matter what you know, they've committed money to him in that 2024 season. But as you said, it's a different situation because now he rolls out there. Aaron's not off in the ether and he's going to return in July. This is his team. It's his guys. Yeah. And a couple of things that I heard over the course of last season that are interesting, when I look at now how it's kind of developed, the arc of how this fifth-year option wasn't picked up, but they put the hedge in place of it. During the course of last season, I started to hear from inside the franchise, hey, there's optimism. Jordan looks better in practices. We think he's turning a corner. There's some confidence here. I started to say that and repeat that. Then he goes into the Eagles game, right? And Aaron Rodgers gets dinged. He goes out. Love has a little appearance in the Eagles game and looks, for all intents and purposes, he looked confident. That was my thing. Yeah. He just looked confident. He looked in control when he went out there. He didn't look lost.
Yeah.
You know, touchdown pass to Christian Watson, was in which Watson does all the dirty work for it. But to me, I was like, oh, wow, maybe this is what I've been hearing about. But the thing was, when I talked to beat writers there, and I know some really, really well, they're like, we don't know. Like, we don't get to see them. So whatever they're saying, they can say whatever they want. We're not out there watching them, so we don't know what's true and what's not.
Yeah.
And now that's going to change because they are going to be able to see him. I do think that it's interesting that after all the season, you know, when I started to hear these good things, I heard they're definitely picking up the fifth year. They're definitely picking up. I started to say it. They're picking up the fifth year. Been told they're going to pick up the fifth year. It's going to happen. And then all of a sudden we go to the owners meetings and Matt LaFleur is like, yeah, and I'm paraphrasing, but let's pump the brakes a little bit on Jordan. There's going to need to be some patience. And I'm like, huh, okay, that's the first time I've heard this. Or, you know, it's definitely this caution that reminds me of yesteryear, reminds me before all the confidence and, hey, he looks like he turned a corner. And then the next piece of information we get after that is, hey, that fifth-year option is a lot of money. Brian Gutekunst is out there saying it's a lot of money to, you know, to basically gift to someone who has not yet played a significant amount of football. And I'm like, okay, well, all of a sudden now there's two kind of negative pieces of information in the system that I wasn't hearing. And it's reticence. And it's where? In the coaching staff? And it's with the general manager who drafted him. So I'm like, okay, this is way more uncertain than I thought. Maybe people really should be backing off on the optimism significantly. But it's going to be fascinating to see him go out there. And as you said, Jaden Reed, they draft Jaden Reed, the wide receiver out of Michigan State. They expect a lot out of him. Luke Musgrave, the Oregon State tight end who looks fantastic. I mean, when he's healthy, looks unbelievable on tape. I mean, he looks like he's just be an absolute killer player out there. They've given him pieces. He's got obviously the young pieces that were there from before. I just want to see it. I want to see what he looks like. I want to see what he looks like without the pressure or the hanging thought in his mind that, well, Aaron's coming back, so I'm just sort of the caretaker now. You're no longer the caretaker. You're the owner.
Yeah, but if they're uncertain about Jordan Love, this is the only way to figure it out. You have to give the guy a chance. And right. If you do have the guy in your building, it's so much more valuable to go with this guy rather than try and find another guy. Because, again, you mentioned it with the 2020 draft picks and how many of the first-rounders aren't even getting fifth-year options. Draft picks are not certain. And so you at least know what you have from Jordan Love. And I think that even though he hasn't gotten a lot of reps on the field, the coaches see what he's like in practice. They see what he's like on the scout team. They see what he's like in pregame warmups. And if he wasn't doing something right and they didn't think there was any chance, I don't think they would be doing this. So I think that they've seen growth from him over the last 3 years. And I think that's what this contract tells us. I think they've seen encouraging signs. He's just not there yet. And now the question is, will he get there? I know that we are focused more on the offseason, but it is interesting to just consider, what does he have to do during the regular season to get that vote of confidence into next year? Like, how much does he have a little bit of a longer leash, for lack of a better phrase, so that if he at least does solid this year, they're like, yeah, we'll see what he can do year two when he's actually playing.
I want to move on, but I would guess something similar to Daniel Jones, right? Like, Daniel Jones' stats weren't otherworldly, but when you watched him, you felt like, okay, it looks like now there's something.
Control of the game.
Right, he's got control of the game. The offense is moving when everybody's there, particularly when Saquon, look, if everybody's healthy and on the field, and look, let's be honest, the wide receivers weren't the best. It was with what he had to work with.
Right.
I felt like he did a good job. You looked at that situation, you said, you know what? It looks like there's capital there. It makes sense now for Daniel Jones to work something out with the Giants and move forward. That, to me, is, I don't think he has to be all world. I think he has to show, I can show you growth from game one to game 17. I can show you some plays. I can show you some chemistry with some of these younger players. I can give you something to build a foundation on. That's what matters. And then you go, okay, well, we already got the fifth year paid for. Awesome. Let's keep this up. Yeah. So moving on, number seven. Tennessee is a very interesting situation now. Will Levis gets drafted in the second round. If I'm going to be completely honest about this, I feel like this was an ownership pick. I don't have any problem saying that. I feel like ownership wanted that quarterback. I don't believe there's a 100% consensus in that building on what exactly they have in Will Levis. I think they know they have some people in the building know they have a toolsy guy who's got size. He's got some prototypical aspects. He's got arm to the ends of the earth. But they also know that the stamp that was put on him in the process was, is he cocky or is he arrogant? Is he Jay Cutler? You know, what exactly are we getting here and how is he going to mesh with the locker room? You and I watched a clip. I thought it was really interesting. It was a clip that the Titans themselves put out where they're making the call. They're talking to Levis. The phone goes first from Rand Carthon, the GM, to the owner, Amy Adams Strunk, right? And then it goes to Mike Vrabel. Mike Vrabel was last. I thought it was really interesting listening to his language where he talked about Will Levis having some gratitude. Just sort of, it sounded like he was already coaching him to, here's what your mentality has to be coming in. Be gracious. Be a good locker room guy. Come in here and learn. Right?
Yeah.
And I'm like, wow, that's interesting how this all broke down. It's interesting they put this clip out, and I wonder if people are reading not only the order that the phone was handed off, which is very suggestive that ownership had a big role in this pick. And then the coach already starting to coach Will Levis, not on talent, on attitude, on approach, right?
Right.
On mentality. Ryan Tannehill's still there. Tannehill said, my job's to win games.
Yeah.
Hope he adds something good to the quarterback room. It already feels kind of a little tense moving into this season. What do you think about the starting, I guess, sort of race there? And just sort of what we've kind of seen unfold a little bit that's interesting about this pick.
Yeah, I mean, before we even get to Levis, Levis's selection at all speaks volumes about what they think about Malik Willis, their third round pick last year. Yep. I mean, that is not a good sign for him. It was not a good sign for him when Josh Dobbs got the nod late in the season, playoff contention games. And now not only is he not starting that game last year, he's not even guaranteed to back up Ryan Tannehill this year. And it's like, well, what are we doing here? And at some point you have to ask the question of, when they draft Will Levis in the second round, how much were they drafting him because he was their guy? They believe in him. They think this is the quarterback they want. The coaching staff is on board, not just potentially ownership, if ownership was on board, versus we need a quarterback. We don't believe in the guy we've got backing up Tannehill, and Tannehill's not going to be here that much longer, and the value's just too good to pass up. And I know I was listening to a podcast earlier this week where they were talking about there's this idea between best player available versus best player available that fits your need and also, like, fits what you're looking for. And I agree that they got, like, the best quarterback available, but did they get the best quarterback available who has the same mentality that Mike Vrabel has? And also, did they get the best quarterback last year in Malik Willis who has Vrabel's attitude? I mean, is his work ethic, is his demeanor in practice? Now, I'm not saying he does. I'm not in the building with them, but I think you have to ask these questions based off what we're seeing and the decisions they're making. The decisions are speaking pretty loudly. And so, I don't know, you almost have that bad situation where you have three quarterbacks in the building and you still don't feel good about who's going to start in 2024 and having one option, much less two.
Really, a really interesting little wrinkle here that I don't, like, it probably hasn't fully sunk in. They passed on Will Levis twice. Not once. They passed on him twice. If they were moving up to number three, which they attempted to do, they didn't achieve that. But they still had the pick at 11, and they passed on Levis, which means they were moving up to 3-4 of quarterback that was not Will Levis, right? They did not achieve that. Then Will Levis was sitting, so they passed on him there. They were already going to get a guy, and it wasn't Will. Then 11 rolls along, and they go, we'll take the guard. We'll take that guy who's, now granted, he might be Zach Martin. But you did. You passed on him twice. And then you take him in the second. And it's fascinating to me if part of me is curious if this doesn't work out. And it could. I think Levis could be amazing there. He could go in and if he goes out into a game and he carries that to the field and he can make those plays and people will gravitate to him. And trust me, a coaching staff or whoever might not be fully on board or might have questions, they'll get on board pretty quickly. Once the guy starts producing, they'll go, oh, yeah, that's fine. It was always my guy. It was always who I wanted. If it doesn't go well, I am very curious if someday the story that gets told is, well, Mike Vrabel had the team go and get quarterbacks in back-to-back years that he wasn't necessarily fully on board with. And I'm not saying that's the case. I'm just saying I'm curious if it might be the case. And number two, if some story down the line, we know how it all ends up, it comes out way later, say Ohio State can't figure out a way to beat Michigan, and they decide, maybe we need to go get Mike Vrabel to be our next head coach. And then, you know, as that's all going down, we're starting to hear stuff about why it might not have worked. I just think Tennessee, and by the way, I don't want Tennessee fans to lose their minds. I'm not being negative here. I actually think there's great upside here for your first two draft picks. Significant, massive upside. I think it absolutely could work out. I just think it's really going to be fascinating to see exactly how it does. All right, so let's move to number six. Can't go long without talking about Deshaun Watson, but I think it's relevant here because, as we said, this is a nit from now to training camp thing. We're going to see him out there. He's had plenty of time to adjust, knock rust off. He's familiar with the offense, all these different aspects that we thought he's still feeling his way there in Cleveland. He hasn't spent a significant amount of time this offseason having to deal with, obviously, all the off the field issues that he was dealing with before. For all intents and purposes, this is the sort of best case scenario now. The time that he's living in right now. They've added assets in Cedric Tillman. The offense has added pieces this offseason. It's been geared toward making sure it's been geared toward making sure that Deshaun Watson has what he needs to be successful. What are you looking for? I mean, is this similar to, I don't want to say Jordan Love because he's a completely unknown commodity. Deshaun Watson's a known commodity. I think, do we look at him now and just say, how close does he look to the ceiling we thought he had before? Mm. Is it still there?
Yeah, again, this is going to be one where it's so tough to tell how much you can translate the OTAs to the season. But I'll tell you, I was at, so Deshaun Watson is repped by the agent David Mulligetta, who's got a lot of other players. And I was working on a story a couple of years ago with Justin Fields and with Kyle Pitts, both of whom are also repped by David Mulligetta. And we were down in Austin in the summer, and Deshaun was there throwing to some of these guys. And it's like, I mean, I'd been around other quarterbacks practicing casually who play in the NFL, and this was another level. And this is after he hadn't played for a year. And so he is one of those guys who doesn't just look great when he's playing at a high level in the games. He's like an awesome practice player because he's just so athletic. He's got that fluidity of motion. He understands where he's going with the ball. You can see his command of the field. And I think that that's going to show in OTAs. And I think whether that translates, we'll have to see. I do think that, first of all, it would be shocking if he wasn't significantly better in 2023 than he was in 2022. So I think that he will be better. The question is how much? How much will that chemistry gel? I do think that, like you mentioned, he's got better weapons around him. He's got Amari Cooper still as a great option. Adding a guy like Cedric Tillman who could contribute pretty soon, especially the thing is Cedric Tillman's not coming in asked to be the guy. It's like you've got Elijah Moore, you've got Amari Cooper, you've got those other guys. And so I think that they will have just a kind of a pick your poison offense. Also Nick Chubb, they've got a lot of running options as well. And so
David Njoku, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah, you've got him and then you've got sort of like a strong offensive line as well. And so I think this offense is going to be good. As we mentioned on Monday's podcast, it's a tough division. And so the question to me isn't, is their offense going to be a legit offense? It's how are they going to hold up against some really good defenses? But I do think that this is going to be an offense that takes a huge step forward. I think it'll be interesting. Like, I don't know. Do we think he will peak this year? Not in terms of his career as a whole, but will he get all the way back this year? Like you hear, okay, from like a physical standpoint, an ACL guy, year two is so much better than year one. Is it something like that when you take a year off for non-injury related reasons? I don't know how much of a sample size we have on that, but I do think that Deshaun Watson is going to look extremely impressive in training camp. And I'll also add that, like, hopefully he's now been going to counseling for at least a year. By the time we get to training camp, like I'm hopeful that all of that will continue to allow for no more off-the-field issues too. And if he can be in a better mental space for himself and for the people around him, I think that that'll really translate on the field as well.
Yeah, and that, you know, that's another important aspect of this. I mean, that's doesn't get talked about as much anymore, but again, that was the infrastructure that was in place for him off the field where the Browns said, look, the guy needs some help. We need to help him. He said, you know, he's into counseling and, you know, these things, trying to grow as a person or however you want to call it. I don't want to be trite about any of this, by the way. But that was real for them. That process always is continuing as well. We just don't talk about it. It's in the background. Me personally, I think max expectations are fine. I think there's no question in my mind that you can put max. You should be able to put max expectations
fully guaranteed expectations, some might
fully,
even
yeah,
say.
Yeah, absolutely. Fully guaranteed expectations. And all that money's kicking in this year, you know. And so it makes no sense to have the guy in the fold now for what's a year. He's been in there a year, okay?
Yeah.
He should know the offense. He should be comfortable with the head coach.
Right.
Should be comfortable with the players around him other than the ones that they've added this offseason. They've given him plenty to work with. And if you look at the two deep on their offense, there's a ton of talent there. There's a ton of draft assets that have been poured into it. So yeah, I think there should be expectations that he is close to or has a trajectory heading very directly and obviously toward being once again the Pro Bowl level player, fringe All-Pro level player that he was his last maxed out year in Houston when he was on the field. And my question to you is, if it doesn't happen, there's going to be some unrest, right? Like if there's something stunted about how he plays or they're not getting what they need out of him, the first thing people are going to do is they're going to come looking for Kevin Stefanski and they're going to say, what's the deal? You're an offensive coach. You should be able to gear this system around him to build success the way that Kevin O'Connell did, you know, for Kirk Cousins, or you just name it. Any of these offensive coaches, you know, Zach Taylor and Joe Burrow, whatever. So, yeah, I mean, Stefanski, there's going to be some pressure. And I think there's already been pressure and criticism and they've weathered it. No problem. I think it would get problematic, though, if they hit bumps. And then next you get to Andrew Berry because they're going to say, well, you signed him to this deal. You poured all the assets into acquiring him. And so far, all we've got is magic beans. We would rather have the cow back. Like, it's, you know, you got to have something. So do you presume, as I do, that pressure is going to start to crawl up the levels of the organization without Deshaun Watson having some pretty clear, sustained success?
Yeah, I do. I don't think it's like a hot seat year for them, but I think it's a, you'll start to get a sense of whether or not the risk that you took was actually worth it year.
Right. At some point, somebody's going to have to pay the price. it's not Watson, because right. You paid him all the money. He's too big to fail.
Right. And the owner. I would agree with you that if you want to know who pays the price in these type of situations, taking the off-field situation out of the picture for a moment, when Russell Wilson and Nathaniel Hackett were having issues last year in Denver and there was a mega trade and a big contract, you couldn't get out of Russ, so you get out of Nathaniel Hackett. Well, yep. You can argue which one was more of an issue in that marriage that did not work, but one of them was expendable from a salary cap standpoint, and it wasn't the quarterback.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. So that bears keeping an eye on. All right, let's move to number 5. Incoming quarterback mega contracts, now that we have seen 2 landed. Got the Jalen Hurts deal, and then we got the Lamar Jackson deal that trumped it. Now we're looking at the next 2 players who can be extended now is Joe Burrow with Cincinnati Bengals, Justin Herbert with the Los Angeles Chargers. Both will be max level deals. I assume both, when they sign their deals, will become the highest paid player in the NFL by a dollar or whatever it ultimately is. I fear between now and the start of the season, because of the ownership groups that are involved here, the owners that are typically not super spendy, let's just blow it out kind of owners, this is going to be protracted unless the quarterbacks take friendly, quote unquote, friendlier deals. And I almost wonder if there's not going to be any traction between now and training camp with these 2 players. And it's largely because of what you and I know. Some owners are not cash rich. Some owners aren't in a hurry to put a ton of money into escrow. Okay. So if you want to talk about the funding rule here or whatever, I just think we can watch this and it's going to be hugely important. But I think it's going to be hugely important because not when the deal gets done and, oh, wow, look at that number. I think it's hugely important because I wonder, like, how are they even going to get the deal done with these 2 owners and probably agents who are staring at each other going, let's let the other guy do his deal first and then we'll come in after.
Yeah, your last point was exactly what I was going to say, which is that if I'm representing either of these guys, why am I making moves? Especially Joe Burrow, I would say, because Joe Burrow has gone to a Super Bowl. He's played at a higher and healthier and more consistent level than Justin Herbert. Both of them are fantastic quarterbacks, and the type of quarterbacks from a skill standpoint that you want to build your franchise around, it's hard to get and you want to keep. But I'm just like, why am I not letting... I mean, you saw what Lamar Jackson just did. He waited till Jalen Hurts got a deal, and he's like, cool, I'll take like 1% more than that, or whatever the percentage was. So if you're those agents, why aren't you doing the same thing? Now, you might have a player who's like, I don't want to wait longer for the money. You also don't know if you're playing on a 5th-year option. There is an element of, if you renegotiate, you might get some of your money soon, and over time, it will be a little bit more. But I don't know. You can see that there are incentives for the agents, for the players, and for the teams to not make moves on this. Now, on the other hand, as much as the teams don't want to shell out the money, and these aren't the richest franchises that the NFL has, they're paying more if they wait. That's just how this market goes. And so you might have them. I mean, Brandon Staley, the Chargers head coach, did say at owners' meetings that they had started discussions and negotiations with Justin Herbert's representation. I get the sense that that one will get done first, but I don't know. And I also think it's pretty believable that once one of them gets done, the other gets done pretty quickly after. But I don't know. Do you think that they'll both get done before the start of this season? 0, 1, or 2?
I'm inclined to say 0, only because, again,
you still got the 5th-year option, too. So they have 2 more years left under contract.
True. And show me the last time either of these franchises raced to make a star quarterback the highest paid player in the NFL.
Yeah.
It's not done. It's not done there. And it's not done with the Chargers, not done with the Bengals. And not only that, Mike Brown has already made comments in the past about Patrick Mahomes' deal. the 10-year mega, you know, $500 million deal, which when you really broke it down and looked at it and the amount of control that it gave the Chiefs was a very, very team-friendly deal. Well, if you got an owner who's already saying, well, geez, look at this other guy, look what he did. That's indicative of this. It's, let me put it this way. It's not exactly Howie Roseman and Jeff Lurie going, we're going to get it done. You know, when Howie Roseman and Jeffrey Lurie are talking at the Super Bowl about having full confidence in getting a deal done, I was like, yeah, that means they're going to pay the living hell out of this guy. Like, it's absolutely happening. And then they just went and did it. I don't get the sense at all with these other two ownership groups. So as you said, there's still 2 years left here. What's scary about this to me is, what if you don't do it? There's the fear on from the player's standpoint, where there's always the aspect of potential injury. You saw it with Dak Prescott. But I think even from ownership and even the fan base a little bit, there's fear because, you know, if you're the Bengals, you're like, you remember Carson Palmer tearing up his knee and never being the same player again. If you're the Chargers, you remember Drew Brees wrecking his shoulder. And then, you know, exiting out of the franchise. Now, you had Phillip Rivers there then. I'm just saying it scares you because you're like, what if there is an injury? What if you have a season where all of a sudden it's like a Lamar Jackson situation where one of them has a subpar year and then gets hurt at the end of it? And then you're like, ooh, now do you really, with these owners, is this going to cause them to pull further back and not want to pay money because they went through one of these seasons? It's just scary to think about the deals not getting done now because you're wading into the what if territories of things that happen in the NFL.
And I will say, if you're Joe Burrow, you're a Super Bowl contending team this year. So even though he has already proven above and beyond that he has what it takes to be an elite NFL quarterback, if he can take them to another Super Bowl, if he can win another Super Bowl, his value goes up.
That's true.
I don't know that the Chargers are quite there as a franchise right now, although prove me wrong. So maybe if you're Jabir, you also kind of keep that in mind in terms of like what your value is going to be now versus in a year.
I guess in my estimation, if you're going to the top of the pile anyway, Super Bowls don't actually earn you more money. It's the other quarterbacks who do deals before you that earn you more.
Like, yeah.
If you're going to reset the market, you're going to reset the market. And I guarantee you Mike Brown's not going to go, well, geez, you know what? You are going to reset the market by $1 million a year in AAV, average annual value. But since you won that Super Bowl, let's kick that up to $5 million.
Right.
Well, A, he's not going to do that because his own pocketbook is going to be screaming at him. And then B, every other owner is going to be like, what the like, if you're the guy, the cheapie, if we can't count on you to not do something dumb like that, what are we going to do when Anthony Richardson blows up and Jim Irsay is out here going, greatest quarterback in history, like that, he's going to sign them to like a $750 million deal in 4 years. Yeah, I mean, it's just...
On that note, when you think about who was happy last week when Lamar Jackson gets his deal done, and it's like, okay, I'm not going to take a fully guaranteed, we're done with that conversation, it's the Chargers and the Bengals.
Oh, for sure.
Because now they're like, cool. Yeah. We don't even need to have this conversation. We weren't going to give in anyway, but now we don't have to worry about it.
Right.
We don't have to worry about the public perception. We don't have the distraction.
We're back to normal. We're back to your regularly scheduled program has now kicked in. The Deshaun Watson emergency broadcast announcement happened briefly. It freaked everybody out, but now we're back watching TV again. Like, we're good. Yeah, that's over with. So it's this is going to be interesting just to see the chatter that kind of comes out, what leaks, what doesn't, how negotiations are going. It's off the football field stuff to me in this respect. This dominates it. All right, let's throw it to our advertisers. We'll come back on the other side of the break, and we will get to number 4 through 1. Okay, welcome back in. Let's get to number 4, the San Francisco 49ers quarterback situation, which to me is still unbelievably interesting because we don't know what's going to happen with Brock Purdy coming off of the elbow surgery. You spoke to Brock Purdy himself and he was being logical and saying, you know, who knows? We've got to wait and see, you know, how this all develops. Trey Lance didn't get traded. To me, clearly was on the block in the respect that the 49ers let it be known that they were receiving, quote unquote, receiving calls on him, which is a cute way of saying, yeah, we're willing to take calls on him. And then you have Sam Darnold, who goes over there on a 1 year, maybe Kyle Shanahan resurrects him in some way, shape, or form. I said it before, I'll say it again. I've never seen a team that feels so championship ready with such a just complete carnival ride at quarterback. Like, who right. knows what the hell is going on there? And here's the crazy thing, too. Monday, I had a team executive who is not prone to asking things like this. He said to me, are we 100% sure that Tom Brady is retired? And I was like, why are you asking this, man? I'm like, are you serious? And I was like, yeah, I think so. I mean, like, I don't know.
A 49ers exec?
Well, that's it was not a 49ers exec. If it was a 49ers exec.
Was his name John Lynch and he's understanding of what it means to be a former player?
We would have had a whole different conversation here. It was not a 49ers exec. But my response was, well, where would you put him? I mean, he's not going to be in Miami unless, like, if Tua got hurt, okay, then we can have that conversation. But that's not happening, okay? We're too far along in the build around to a continuum that it doesn't make sense there. I look further afield and some of the other locations where people were like, maybe Tom Brady shows up in Tennessee. No, that's off the table. Pretty much everywhere else feels pretty wrapped up in terms of places he could potentially go, except San Francisco, which even though it doesn't make sense from a cap perspective, totally understand that. Need and want perspective, though, I mean, I'm not, and by the way, I'm not making this into a Tom Brady thing. I'm just saying that's how ridiculous this quarterback situation is, because that's who the executive asked about. When I said, where would you put him? He was like, well, what about San Francisco's situation? And I'm like, that's how messed up it is in San Francisco. That we're in May.
Right.
May. And someone is asking still about Tom Brady. And I was like, God, aren't we over this yet? I give you the 49ers in 2023.
Yeah, I'd say a couple things. One, there are times when we're recording this podcast, Charles, that I'm like, I get what you're saying. And I also know that this is about to become a video on YahooSports.com. But yeah, I think that if I'm Brady, am I coming back? No, I think Brady's retired. I really do. I think the 49ers would make the call and just see what he's interested in if I'm coming from their side. But if I'm Brady, I'm like, no, but thank you. Best of luck. And come cheer on the WNBA Aces when you get over to Las Vegas. I would say that this is one of the storylines that we will know the most about this summer, because as mentioned in previous podcasts, I talked to Brock Purdy, and he, after 3 months, is allowed to throw again. So he's already got that brace off, but come June 10th or so, that's right when he hits that 12-week mark, he's going to be allowed to throw. And based on how quickly things progress from there, that's when they'll actually start to have a real timeline for him. And I think we're not going to see him likely. I mean, he's not going to be taking the reps in OTAs, but that will dictate how much he's taken the reps in training camp. So I think that'll be interesting. But I'll also say, I talked to Nick Bosa this week, and I think we're going to have that segment on next week's podcast. So anyone listening now, come back to us for that. But it was just kind of funny when I was talking to him about, hey, how much is your defense going to change under Steve Wilks now that D'Amico Ryans is the Texans head coach? And he's like, I mean, not a whole lot. Like, we're the best defense in the league. It's working. And it's such a good point, because when you think at the offensive skills set that they have and the insane defensive power, both individually and collectively, you feel like this team has just been so good for so long, and yet they have not won a Super Bowl. And I know it's so hard to win a Super Bowl, but it's wild to think about all of the pieces in play there at GM, head coach, offense, defense. So much has gone right. But because their quarterback has been such a question, it's really hard to get over that final hump without an elite quarterback.
There's a reality here, too. No matter how fast Brock Purdy thinks he's going to get back, he's not going to be there for OTAs doing stuff.
Right.
He's not going to be there for full squad minis doing stuff.
Which training means, camp, he could be.
Okay, training camp. But I'm talking about
started on pop. And
we're talking about now. We're talking about now to camp, right? That's the period
so
we're focusing on.
Sam Darnold has a chance to prove some things, yeah.
Sam Darnold is basically out there. He's John Wayne in the saddle with the 49ers. Trying to, if I was him, I'd be talking to Kyle Shanahan. I'd be doing anything I could to make it look like I have recaptured any swagger that I had. here's the skill set. Go watch my last couple games in Carolina last year. I still got it. I just needed to get away from consecutive messes. Total mess with the Jets and Adam Gase, and then a total mess in Carolina with Matt Rhule. How unfair to me, boo-hoo, Sam Darnold. Now I'm finally where I needed to be, in the right hands, and we're going to Geno Smith it, and I'm going to be great, right? Like, if I'm Sam Darnold, that's what I am selling between now and then. And that's the one thing about Darnold is it, at the very least, and I should have recognized it about Geno when I blew off Seattle saying that Geno really could be the guy. Geno was not bereft of talent. He had arm talent. He had athletic talent. Sam Darnold does have talent. He does have arm talent. He does have athletic talent.
Yeah.
It's not gone. It just looked like for years. Okay.
And think about the guys who get with the right coaching staff and how much that can do for that. Again, Trevor Lawrence is not a one-to-one comparison, but think about what he was able to do just getting past Urban Meyer and Doug Peterson.
Weirdly enough, it's Sam Darnold season until July. Like, it's weird to say that, but it really is. I don't know how to feel about that. But if you ask me, do you really want to get out there and see this guy? I kind of do want to see him.
Yeah.
And see what he does with Kyle Shanahan reprogramming the buttons in his head and whether or not that can really work. But
that's once again, who's putting chips in brains, Kyle Shanahan. That's quarterback.
Exactly. We're talking about that's how messed up the situation is that we're talking about. Is Brady retired? What's Brady doing? And then it's like Sam Darnold's the guy. Like that's how screwed up this situation is that we're talking about these guys as potential outs, one who absolutely is not coming through that door, I don't think, and the other guy who came through that door, but we have no idea what he really is this far into his career. So going to be entertaining. All right, number three, Tua Tagovailoa. Can he stay healthy? Miami looks like a team that should be able to make some noise, you know, when you look at the additions that they've made, adding Vic Fangio as defensive coordinator. The roster feels really stacked. I love Mike McDaniel. Every time that dude talks, he makes me laugh.
Oh my God, you know, the he's best.
One of the most entertaining coaches out there. Does not seem to take himself too seriously at all. It's just, you sit there and you stare at it and you're like, it kind of depends on Tua. You know, can he not sustain a concussion? And when I say healthy, I don't mean, shoulder, I'm just talking about the concussion. When he came out and he said, hey, I thought about retirement after the concussions, which naturally that makes sense. Anybody would sit there and contemplate, like, what does this mean for me? I think the question, we're all going to hold our breath every time he gets hit. We're going to hold our breath and go, is this it? Is this it? Is this it? The first time he gets thrown to the ground, you know, we're going to hold our breath. Now they've tried to resolve it with, there's going to be some new helmet technology, right? They're working on the helmets to continue to try and protect people from concussions. Weirdly enough, there's been this idea of him learning how to hit the ground, which is, I don't know how you can practice that, but trying to learn how to hit the ground in a way that doesn't allow your head to smack into the turf. That's the story, right? And I know we're talking about this between now and July, but I think that's when this begins. I don't think it's just when they get out there on the field and they're playing in practices, joint practices, and there's real guys flying around, or you get into games in the regular season, he starts to get hit. I think it matters now to see him as healthy as possible, to be as confident as possible, and just sort of what that looks like now going, allow people to not have severe anxiety about this, which I think a lot of Dolphins fans do.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you. I mean, it sounds, when we were putting together the story list, and it's like, is everything going to be about the quarterbacks? But particularly for these uber talented teams that feel very complete, the question is, can their quarterback get them over the top? And Tua's line one on that. I think if I'm the Dolphins, I don't want to give him any kind of training wheels and OTAs, because OTAs are inherently not as physical. They're not contact practices. If they get too physical, then you're getting fined. You're losing one next year. Teams don't even use them all necessarily. And so I want Tua to be in that mindset of everything that the team is doing, I'm capable of doing, and see how that works, because you want to make sure that mentally he's freeing himself and remembering he can do some of these things, and he's not going to have a live pass rush because that's just not what OTAs are, but he's going to be able to do it. And then we'll see where it goes. I like that the helmets are there. I think that the structure in place for the preseason and the offseason is really good for someone like him, but it's still not going to really be like, okay, well, then you're fine for regular season. I love that he learned how to fall, though, and did jujitsu and all that, though, and how to distribute his weight and his energy. And he's talking about tucking your chin and how you disperse your energy when you fall. I mean, as someone who had, like, a brief stint a few years ago when I fell running, like, it wasn't that often relative to how much I was running, but it happened several times, and I would always scrape myself on my palm, my knee, and my elbow, like, the exact same one in the exact same place, because I guess my body was just trained to fall in the same way. It's a real thing, like, however our body's used to it. And so if he's able to retrain that, I'm not saying it's going to make the difference in whether or not he gets concussed ever, but I do think it can help reduce the impact.
Did you just say that? I'd honestly forgotten about that. Next.
I want to go write more about that now.
Cirque du Soleil. We'll get them all out there with Cirque du Soleil and we'll figure out how does he do loop-de-loops and not fall on his head. I mean, I shouldn't be laughing about this. This is a serious, it's a serious thing we're going to be watching here. But
gymnastics, that's a big deal, too. When I covered gymnastics for a little bit, I mean, you have to learn how to fall because you're going to fall off the bars at some point.
I get it, and it's necessary. It's kind of crazy, and it's funny, and we laugh about it or whatever, but it is necessary because you don't want to see what happened last year happen again. And, you know, obviously, look, OTAs, he's not going to get a concussion. If he gets a concussion, OTAs, everybody gets fired. Like, everybody gets fired, release the team. Like, I don't know how that would ever happen in a million years. But it's I just want to see the guy confident, you know. I want to see guys believing that – this is, you know, going into the season, it's not just this. We're going to hold our breaths constantly over whether or not this is going to happen. It's like when you and I covered teams, particularly when I was a beat reporter, I always remembered anytime someone would suffer a pretty serious injury, you always knew on the other side of it, there was just this huge mental hurdle they were going to have to overcome. Hey, you're going to get hit in your knee again and you blow out your knee. You got to take hits in your knee still. You're going to get hit in your ankle that you broke. Tua's going to get hit in the head again. He's going to. It's just, does he get concussed? And you know, where is his mental, you know, how is he in terms of like mental focus and anxiety after that occurs, especially if it's, you know, he gets hit and there's not a concussion. It's like, okay, I'm all right. I'm still a football player. Let's move on. All right. Number two. Knew we were going to get to this. Knew we were going to talk about the Jets. Aaron Rodgers and the Jets. I think it's important. And I went on a little mini rant before we started the show because
you rant.
I thought for sure chip on his shoulder. They spent all the assets. Like there's all these different things.
He's come out of the darkness refreshed.
Come out of the darkness. He's mad about the Packers and how they handled it and all this stuff. And, you know, I didn't get good cell phone reception, but hey, we called him a bunch of all this crap that we're talking about. And I thought, Rodgers said he's going to show up. He's going to work with the team in the offseason. In my mind, my mind said he's going to be there every day. That's what I thought. I was like, he's going to be there every single day. He's going to be working every single day. I know he's an old guy, but this chemistry is important. We're talking about a short runway here. At max, we're probably talking 2 years. At minimum, maybe 1 year. But he's going to be 100% all in all the time because of what it took to bring this all together. And frankly, a little bit of what's on the line here, not just for the Jets, but frankly, even for Aaron Rodgers and legacy. This could be a legacy season for him. If he goes and wins a Super Bowl with the Jets, we're talking about Aaron Rodgers in a way that is vastly different than how we've ever talked about Aaron Rodgers before.
Oh, that's what it was.
Jory, why? So I'll just ask you flat out. He's hedging a little bit on this full purchase. I don't know, not even a little bit. Like he's clearly not going to be there 100% of the time everybody else is. Some people aren't going to have a problem with that. Fine if you don't. I personally just thought it was going to be all the way in, bunk in there, he's in. And it's mostly kind of in, maybe not be there all the time.
Yeah, to me, my thing is, I don't need you practicing all the time. I don't need you running through the drills all the time when you're 39 years old, but I need you in the building. I need you to say, like, great. You might know the offense pretty well because you've worked with Nathaniel Hackett. Teach it to everyone else. Teach them what you want. We saw in stories last year, like the one he got upset with The Athletic's Kalen Keller about, which is he has different hand signals that he wants at the line scrimmage. And it's like, cool, if you want that, this is the time to teach them. Teach them now so by the fall you've got it all figured out. I think that from a culture standpoint, from a leadership standpoint, as he said, he's not here to be a savior. If he wants to lead authentically in the best way possible, you show up to OTAs. And you show up for all of them. And that's the thing. I don't need you showing up necessarily for every lift day in April if you didn't want to. It would be nice. And I think that there are a lot of organizations where that does happen and it helps. And maybe there are times in June or July where you're bringing your receivers with you to California and you're training with them then. But I want them to know that you're always available. I want them to know that you are actively involved, not just in your own development, but in their development. And to understand what that means schematically and also culturally, because you also hear a lot of stories. I mean, I've talked to a lot of guys during my career who have been like, yeah, the first year I was on the team, like, I just, like, I didn't want to ask Dak a question because I thought I'd feel stupid. And so I asked Cooper Rush, which isn't bad. Cooper Rush might know the answer textbook, but he doesn't know necessarily what Dak is thinking at every single moment. And so you need to establish that kind of rapport where even if you're going to be a Hall of Fame quarterback and even if you've won a Super Bowl, guys feel like you are around when these conversations are happening. And so they understand what you're looking for and what questions will come up. Because again, I think there are a lot of guys, especially younger players, who are not necessarily going to come to you for a question, but if you're in the meetings with them as things are getting installed, then they might say, like, what does that mean? And then maybe you hear it and you chime in. So I think it's really important for the communication that he's there as much as possible. And I'd also say, like, OTAs are not that long. You still have your summer. Yeah. And you're going to be living up here anyway. There's plenty you can do. If you want to go to OTAs and then the rest of the week go see a Rangers game or go see a Yankees game, you can do that. So he needs to be in the building.
Yeah, and OTAs aren't, it's not the most mentally taxing environment either, okay? Like, it is, it's much more loose and, you know, it's not like you're going there and you're getting ground to a pulp, right?
Yeah.
And even when he is there, as you said, I'm fine with you taking the physical rest days or whatever, but I think the mental reps are important for you to be a reference guide for other individuals. And frankly, from the Jets, and I'm not saying this is the case, but if, you know, I would imagine if you're running the Jets, you know, you're like, well, we want Zach Wilson to see you showing up to every single, you know, like
that's
Zach
a good
Wilson's
point
like, hey,
too.
Man, that's a Hall of Famer. And he's here all the time. He's available all the time to help. Now I'm looking at how he communicates with his teammates all the time, how he handles questions, how he carries himself. I think it's even good for the organization when, as you said, you have these, when I would go out to the Cowboys, when you're covering Cowboys, and they would make the big deal about participation percentage. You know, remember Jason Garrett and we're at 99% participation percentage. And I was like, yeah, you know what? If you're the 46th player on that roster and you're walking through and you see Dak Prescott in the building, you're kind of like,
and you should always be in the building.
Yeah. But also you're like, sweet. Like, this is cool. Good. Bam. Yeah. We got all the guys in here. Like, this is, you know, that's part of what culture is. And I understand it's not his job to be the savior or the culture builder or all these different things, but it just comes down to what does he want? Okay. Yeah. What do you want? How do you want this to go? And yeah, I don't know. I just, whatever it is. Jets fans are going to get pissed because they're gonna be like, whatever, shut up, let Aaron do whatever he wants to do. All right. Like, that's the world you want to live in. That's fine. But I don't want to hear about it later when there's, like you said, there's a hiccup where somebody didn't know you know, hand signal in the middle of a game. And maybe that's something that could have been helpful or in May or June of all times.
Yeah, the TLDR is, yes, Aaron Rodgers can play fine without it, but this isn't about him. It's about him leading everyone around him and lifting everyone around him.
Don't TLDR our segments, Jory, okay?
Listen to the whole thing.
Listen and read, okay? all right, number one. Maybe not number one to everybody, but it's really interesting. The rookie QBs, they're all in their new homes, which are starting week one. I think it's fascinating because I think it's clear we have two that are absolutely unequivocally starting week one. That's going to end up being Bryce Young in Carolina. It's going to be CJ Stroud in Houston. But I think when we get to Anthony Richardson, it's going to get really interesting.
Yeah.
I know there's this thought, probably, Gardner Minshew can handle the load and like all this stuff. I don't know, man. I mean, you're already hearing he's going to play, right? We're already hearing from Jim Irsay he's going to play this year. I'm like, man, already. We're already saying this. He's definitely going to play. When everybody out there, and everybody can be wrong, but everybody out there going into this whole entire assessment was he would benefit from the redshirt year. Not going to get the redshirt year. He's going to get some burn. And to me, I think if he's going to get some burn, I think that guy's going to start games in 2023. The question is he going to start week one? So let's start at Richardson. What are we doing here, man? Like, he's so much work here to be done. You're really going to walk this guy out week one, maybe.
Yeah, our Anthony Richardson conversation reminds me of our conversation about Tennessee and Will Levis, because I think there are franchises where you say, hey, what Kyle Shanahan wants in San Francisco, he's going to do, and that is how decisions are going to be made. They might be made in concert with the Yorks. They might be made in concert with John Lynch. But if Kyle doesn't want it, it's not happening. I don't think that's how everywhere operates, and I don't think that's how Indianapolis operates. If Jim Irsay really wants Anthony Richardson starting at the beginning of the year, I don't know. Shane Steichen's a first-year coach, and Irsay's going to be tweeting about it, and it's not going to be a quiet situation. This isn't going to be something internal we never hear about, because Jim's going to tell us himself. I think he will, but I think Shane Steichen would rather have Gardner Minshew start the year. Now, he can see what Anthony Richardson does. A guy like him is typically going to light up preseason because of his physical gifts and the tools he's got and the relative competition he'll be going against. I do think he'll start in 2023, and I think that's probably the right decision, but I don't think he should start week one. And I think he would have to have, like, a pretty spectacular training camp for Shane Steichen to want that. So to me, it's not a question of, like, there's a question of will he, and there's a question of what will the coaching staff want, and I don't think they're the same question.
I think the further we go and the more that movie Draft Day, well, I think as we go every year and like that movie Draft Day becomes more and more part of our annual consciousness every time the draft comes through. Frank Langella, who played Anthony Molina, the owner of the Browns, I swear to God, Irsay felt like that's who he was this draft. I want a splash. Give me a splash. You know, he wanted like. And then he's out there and he's already hyping everybody up on Anthony Richardson, effectively comparing him to Joe Montana. Like, you're just like, dude, what the hell? Slow down. It's not a speed up situation. It's a slow down situation. How long is it going to be before he's outside of his private jet again, shooting these whack ass videos and posting them about what he thinks is going on in the organization and where he's at, you know, mentally? And it feels like a situation where if you're Shane Steichen, you're probably overwhelmed by it. If you're Chris Ballard, at this point, you're kind of like, I feel like he's in like a hostage video now. Like, he's like, I don't even know what's going on in this. Like, this organization is gotten away from me. It's going to be interesting to see if he shows up on week one, and if not on week one, how long it is before, especially if there's, look, if they struggle, they lose games, right? Fans are going to be like, let's throw the kid in. Let's see the kid. Like, come on,
bring
get
back
some Jeff reps.
Saturday.
Yeah.
That's the break glass in case of emergency. The other thing I want to ask you, Charles, is, so clearly Bryce Young is the most likely quarterback to start. CJ Stroud is right there with him. And Carolina and Houston, top two picks from clearly quarterback needy franchises. I would still put Anthony Richardson at three, but I want to ask you who you would put at four, because Will Levis might be the obvious answer, but I think it might be Stetson Bennett. I'm kind of wondering, with the Rams, Matthew Stafford, his elbow, his general health at that age, I don't know that he's going to be healthy. I hope he is. I'm not trying to injure a guy out here in May. But if you were to believe what the organizations were saying this weekend, which we shouldn't because everyone's lying, but if you were, Rams general manager Les Snead was like, wow, he loves Stetson Bennett. And that guy is getting the opportunity. And the defensive coaches are like, he's going to make our guys better on the scout team. I mean, they were really talking that guy up. He obviously just won a championship for Georgia. He's got a little bit of like the Baker Mayfield moxie that the Rams saw the high of when he came in for them on Thursday Night Football last year. And he's coming off 4 years of playing at Georgia, 2 years of starting, and 66 touchdowns. I mean, Charles is just giving me this look.
Joy is out here. She's fishing for clips right now. She's trying to get a Yahoo video clip made.
I do not want a clip.
She's trying, like, you guys take them. She is absolutely making her best attempt.
I'm going to mention Tom Brady and Kyle Shanahan. I'm trying to get clips.
That won't show up in clips, though.
Only because you demanded it, does it? Absolutely. Are you open to it showing up in clips? Let's get this on the record, Sierra.
On the record, I'm not open to it. And Stone, we're going to have a conversation if that shows up in a clip.
If you keep getting on me, I'll make sure it shows up on a clip. Listen, I know some video people who work for us.
Les Snead at Auburn had quite a reputation of being a guy who liked to have a good time as a football player. Okay, so it does not surprise me that he's like, I like this Stetson Bennett kid. You know, he really likes to have a good time. And yeah, sometimes it goes too far, as we saw. But he's cocky, you know. There's no doubt the cockiness, the confidence he brings to the table. He really believes, despite everybody saying for a long part of the larger part of the last two years, well, he's not going to translate to the NFL. He's not going to be an NFL starter. What you're seeing here is a really good college quarterback surrounded by elite talent who will not translate to the next level. Well, okay, maybe Les Snead and the Rams disagree. If Matt Stafford's healthy, though, you and I both know there ain't no way in hell.
Right.
Health permitting, though. I mean, if Matt Stafford's banged up, is it possible for Stetson Bennett to see? Yeah, hell yeah. Sure, absolutely. I think the organization's cocky enough. I think Sean McVay's cocky enough to go, yeah, we can get that kid ready. And so... Right.
By no means do I think that... I mean...
No, he ain't beating Stafford.
Beating Stafford, and they're not being like, oh, it's time to make the move. I'm not making that argument. I think the question is more, if Stafford gets hurt, and I saw this again in Dallas when Tony Romo went down, Kellen Moore went down, and we were like... Okay, Cowboys, sure, you're not going to bring in a veteran quarterback. And then fourth-round pick like Stetson Bennett, Dak Prescott, comes in and has that run. And I'm not saying that Stetson is Dak. They're very different guys in a lot of different ways. But I think that if there is a situation where Stafford is not available for the beginning of the season, based off what the Rams are telling us now and the enthusiasm with which they are telling us, I think we have to consider the possibility that they would start Stetson Bennett rather than go get a veteran journeyman.
I agree with that. I could see that staff rolling with that kid. I mean, look, we've seen in the last couple of years, we saw Sean McVay kind of roll the dice on some different quarterbacks when he didn't have, you know, either Goff available or he didn't have, you know, Matt Stafford available. So if you're willing to roll the dice on like a Baker Mayfield in the fashion that they ultimately did, and again, some of the other guys and decisions that they made, yeah, absolutely. You drafted the kid, you feel good about him, you're going to have whatever amount of time now to get him prepared. So it's interesting though, you bring that up. I am always curious about Matthew Stafford's health. So Stetson Bennett could certainly become more relevant than we thought, faster than we thought. Before we get out of here though, we talked about Tennessee. Tannehill being on that roster now surprises me a little bit, only from the standpoint of I really thought once it became clear that Tennessee was a team that was trying to get to three. And I think Houston thought, honestly, for a period there, we're gonna get snaked on this third pick. We're not gonna end up getting this third pick. Tennessee's gonna walk with it, even though we think we outbid them. My thought process was he's gonna get dealt during the draft. The way we saw DeAndre Swift obviously got dealt when Jahmyr Gibbs lands in Detroit. So either it happens during late stages of the draft or right after the draft. They didn't get Stroud. They end up with Levis. We've talked about how Levis is functionally, it all feels like a work in progress there with that pick. That to me is why Ryan Tannehill is still on the roster. I assume that's why Ryan Tannehill will start, even though they're saying, hey, Will Levis is going to be our third quarterback. Malik Willis is going to be the number two, but everybody's going to compete for this job. I hear him say that. I guess I feel like it's still kind of Tannehill's team right now. They're just sort of waiting to see what Levis can do to potentially take it away from him.
Yeah. Were you surprised that Tennessee went 6 offensive picks and 6 draft picks this year? No one on defense?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's rare. You don't really see even it's a relatively small class by most standards. Right. 6 picks is a small class. Usually you won't see a completely one-sided draft. But I think if you look at the makeup of that offense – I mean, you have a centerpiece running back who's old, right? Like He's getting, like, Henry's already been on the block. So it makes sense that you would bring in a potential heir apparent, albeit, you know, Tajay Spears, net knee, who knows. It makes sense that you would bring in the heir apparent for Ryan Tannehill, who, again, they were pocket shopping before the draft, just kind of checking to see if teams were interested in him. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Maybe this draft, I would just say maybe the way this draft fell, maybe there's not the multitude of guys available where you need it most. I like, to me, is it possible they added a starting running back? Yeah, it's possible if health permits and he is what we kind of saw last year at Tulane. Is it possible, Will Levis, you added a starting quarterback? Yeah, it's possible given the tools he brings to the table, the rep and all that, the ceiling. Is it possible that Peter Skoronski is Zach Martin? It's possible, right? So you're if you're sitting there going, we're picking starters, then I guess I kind of understand it at that stage. You know, you just you take the best shots you have on the table, and you know. But I don't know, again, how much ownership's involved in something. Maybe the Levis pick was supposed to be a defensive player, you know, and then it didn't end up being a defensive player.
You picked Will Levis, not Will Anderson Jr.?
Yeah, right. Wait, he's the one. Yeah. Whoops. Bring the card back. It would have been great if they had tried to draft Will Anderson in the second round. I would have enjoyed that. All right, that's it. We gave you 8 storylines. Get used to this. We're going to be doing different things like this as we head into the regular season now that teams are settled out. And then obviously whatever news comes down the pipeline. However, it is May now. We do have to dial this back a little bit and start to take a breather as we stretch our legs and try to get ourselves together for training camp. So we're going to go back to 1 pod a week on Mondays. Maybe we will throw in an emergency pod if something completely crazy happens, but expect us to maintain the 1 pod a week schedule, at least up until we start to get into the reaches of July where teams are coming back online again. So tune in every Monday. We'll look forward to that. You can get Jory Epstein on Twitter at Jory Epstein. You get myself at Charles Robinson. You can get our ace producer, Stone Rochelle, SJ Rochelle. And please, as always, help us keep Therese Paler's legacy alive. Check out breakingtea.com/Therese for the All Juice Tea or hoodie. Remember, new design there. So if you're still rocking the throwback, get the new one. Really nice tees and hoodies. Got one of each myself, and I'm loving them. Remember, the proceeds from that purchase go to support the Therese Paler scholarships at Howard University and Missouri. And if you could, please check out our new NBA podcast, Ball Don't Lie, featuring Vinny Goodwill, Jake Fisher, and Dan Devine, and our new MLB podcast, Bandwagon, featuring Hannah Kaiser and Zach Kreiser, both available wherever you get your podcasts. 5-star reviews. We need them. Please help us out with them. Tell a friend. Help us grow the family. We will see you on Monday. Peace.